Good afternoon. My name is Dietmar and welcome to Dietmar's Chatterbox. And as I mentioned before, I'm a South African living in London of German heritage. And I have a nice mix of ideas and social experiences, which I hope to be able to share on this podcast. As I've said before, I've been meaning to do a podcast for the last few years and decided now is time to do so. I hope you enjoy my podcast. And I'll be talking about many different things on this particular on the podcast that I'll be doing. Some of them will deal with what I do on a daily basis, so that's working within the domain name industry. Also, be talking about other topics of interest to me, that is things like Funko Pops or Bobbleheads, as they're commonly referred to, technology, iPad Pros, Apple products, Windows products, etc. I'll also be talking maybe a little bit about politics and other issues of the day. As I say, I work in the domain industry and I have over 19 years worth of domain name experience, as well as experience within the finance sector, political sector. And as I say, I'm currently working as a domain name consultant. The most important thing I'd like to point out is that the views expressed by me during this podcast are my own and do not represent the company I work for. So again, this is all personal. So without further delay, let's start with episode 3. And we'll be talking about the Contracted Parties House, or CPH, as they're referred to within the ICANN community. The CPH are those parts of the ICANN ecosystem that pay ICANN money, fees, either on a monthly, quarterly, or yearly basis to run their businesses within the domain name sector. So, Contracted Parties House. This following group within the ICANN community, which is referred to as the Contracted Parties House, the CPH is made up of those business entities that pay ICANN each year, so that's either on a monthly basis, a quarterly basis, or a yearly basis for the sale of domain names or anything to do with the domain name sector. So again, these are people that deal with domain names themselves, so that excludes web hosting, email hosting, or any of those other peripheral types of services, you know, providing of email platforms, etc. This has solely to do with the domain name sector, which is obviously what ICANN controls. So this money is then used by ICANN to run their business, so to run the business of ICANN. And the money is used, amongst other things, to pay for the annual meetings that take place, the three meetings that take place every year, and also sometimes for other groups' leaders' travel participation. So leaders of various groups get a stipend to allow them to travel to these three meetings a year, as well as legal fees. As you can imagine, there would probably be, on occasion, some legal wrangle with regards to domain names, either from a governmental perspective, personal business perspective, etc. This money does occasionally cause strife within the community, specifically when a certain registry or registrar model of business is questioned by the non-contracted parties house. Now, I will deal with the non-contracted parties house in the following episode. So, now let's look at the two groups which make up or constitute the CPH, their composition, and what type of work they do within the ICANN multi-stakeholder bottom-up process model. So, the first one we'll look at is called the Registry Stakeholder Group, or as they are commonly referred to as the RYSG. As I've mentioned before, this sector is made up of a lot of acronyms. So ICANN, there's a lot of acronyms. And I'll try and make it as easy as possible for everyone that's listening to these podcasts. And the acronyms were put in place so that people that come into the sector, for the first time or not even for the first time, can actually understand what's going on within the sector. It also helps to make conversations a bit shorter, as well as, written word becomes, documents become a little shorter. Because you can imagine if you had to say the registry stakeholder group or the registrar stakeholder group or ICANN in its full words or the GNSO, etc., your conversation would be quite a long conversation. So the RYSG has a role on the GNSO Council. We spoke about the GNSO Council in the previous episode. And the RYSG councillors are volunteered to work on this group. And there's also an executive committee of the RYSG, and that is made up of a chair, a vice chair of policy, a vice chair of administration, and a treasurer. The holders of these positions are usually chosen before an AGM. That's an ICANN AGM, which is usually the third meeting of the year. And they are chosen by the members of the RYSG. And they usually, time permitting, hang around for at least three AGMs. So they get voted in on one, and then they get voted out on the third one. Or, alternatively, re-voted in on the third one. And as I said, they are chosen by the members of the RYSG and therefore represent the interests of the registries at high-level ICANN meetings, so meetings between the board, the GNSO Council, etc. Another important part is that the RYSG also has members on what's called the Nominating Committee, or the NOMCOM, as it is commonly referred to. The NOMCOM is charged with identifying, interviewing, and choosing members of the ICANN board. So every year, they get an opportunity to sit together. That's all done in a very private setting, a very confidential setting. And they choose, the NOMCOM then choose members of the board. So whichever position might be coming up within the board, they are there to choose who will represent the community as a whole. And the RYSG has a member or two within the NOMCOM, which is made up of all parts of the ICANN community. So the RYSG is a recognized entity within the GNSO. So as I mentioned before, the GNSO is the overarching body, and then below it there are a set of entity bodies. So RYSG is one of those. And this was formed according to Article 10, Section 5, which was from September 2009, of the ICANN bylaws. The ICANN bylaws did change recently as well, but the creation of the RYSG has remained. The primary role of the RYSG is to represent the interests of the GTLD registry operators. So, to be clear, that is not the CCTLD operators. So, it's not the country code TLD operators. This is just GTLD operators, generic top-level domain operators. So, those are the new ones that I referred to before, as well as ones like .com, .biz, .info, etc. So, just to go back, they represent the interests of the registry operators that are currently under contract with ICANN to provide GTLD registry services, which can be in support of one or more GTLD. So that's referred to as the back-end provider. They also agree to be bound by consensus policies that are set out in each of the contracts that they have with ICANN. And they also voluntarily choose to be members of the RYSG. So not all registries are members of the RYSG. So some registries are quite small, so they don't really have the need or the inclination to be involved. There are other groups, interest groups, that have membership of the RYSG, and that comes under Article 6. And one of an example of an interest group is the Brand Registry Group, or the BRG as they refer to. And they represent .brand registry operators. So after 2012, the application round that closed in 2012, there were a whole lot of brands that were created. So about 690 odd brands, TLDs were created. So things like .sky, .microsoft, .hbo, .fox, etc. So these are brand specific. Now, not all brands take part in the RYSG, but they do take part in the Brand Registry Group, or the BRG, which then has a seat on the RYSG, but it only has one vote. So it doesn't, even though it might represent, let's say, 30 brand TLDs, it only has one vote. And a very important point about the RYSG and its leadership is that they need to be impartial, accountable, and most importantly, they need to disclose any conflicts of interest. So all members of the RYSG, either in executive committee position or non-executive committee position, so just volunteers, they all disclose who they work for and if there are any conflicts of interest with regards to their appointment or their taking part in the RYSG. This is in place just to try and help prevent the RYSG from being co-opted by one member to represent its own interests. So let's just say one large entity controlling the RYSG would be bad because they would potentially, I'm not saying they will, but they potentially will always be looking after their own interests during negotiations and in working groups and could potentially, you know, try and get benefit from the RYSG for themselves and not for the entire registry stakeholder group. The number, and as I just mentioned before, the number of registries jumped in 2013. 2013 is when they started to sign their contracts. And the number jumped from a small number of GTLDs before that, of around about 15, that's 15. And there are now over 1,600 plus TLDs that are around. So that includes the new GTLDs as well as the GTLDs, the legacy TLDs. And as I mentioned before, this does exclude CCTLDs. So the country code TLDs are not part of the registry stakeholder group. It's also important to remember that all registries are required to abide by consensus policy decisions. So what this basically means at the end of the day is that if the a community working group, so a working group, decides that there's a change that needs to take place for registries, they need to either follow that change or they can institute a negotiation with ICANN with regards that particular consensus policy. So consensus policy, for example, would be WHOIS and GDPR. I'll be talking about that a little bit later on in this episode, but who is GDPR and how that impacts on how data is presented to the outside world. And also, you know, I mean, the CPH does have representation on working groups. So at all stages, they are involved in working groups and can also influence how those working groups function. And they also have the opportunity to put their interests, so the registry's interests, in front of the working group. So everyone is always potentially looked after. So the next group within the contracted parties house is called the Registrar Stakeholder Group, or RRSG, as it is referred to in the community. And this is made up of registrars that have signed contracts with ICANN to run their businesses. Again, the RRSG, like the RYSG, has a role on the GNSO Council, so it provides counselors who have volunteered to this group. The executive committee of the RRSG is made up of a chair, a vice chair of policy, a vice chair of technical operations, a secretary, a treasurer, and a NOMCOM representative. The holders of these positions are usually chosen, like the RYSG, before an AGM, and they are usually in position for at least three AGMs, and then depending on whether they are time limited, i.e. they've served more than two terms or three terms, they are then eligible to be revoted in, or they get voted out and a new person comes in. Okay, the RRSG member on the NOMCOM is the same as the RYSG. I mean, it's a different person, but they have the same functionality, i.e. they are there to interview and make sure that positions on the board are filled by the correct person or the a person that is suitable for the role. The RRSG, or the Registrar Stakeholder Group, was first recognized by the ICANN board at a meeting on the 27th of May, 1999. So that's just over a year after ICANN was created in 1998. And resolution 99.31 is the resolution that refers to their creation. So as can be noted, the RRSG was created before the RYSG. And like the RYSG, the RRSG participates in the ICANN policymaking process via working groups, PDPs, etc. And it serves as the voice of registrars within the ICANN process. It's also important to remember that all registrars are required to abide by consensus policy decisions in their contracts. So their consensus policy decisions may be different to what the registries are required to have. And again, they have the opportunity to, you know, agree to it or disagree to it. The number of registrars is roughly 2,129, but this changes on a regular basis as new ones come on board and older ones either disappear or get bought up by other competitors, etc. Interesting point about this number is that a large number of the registrars that are referred to that have contracts with ICANN are made up of drop catchers. Now, a drop catching registrar, their main role is to try and register a domain name as soon as it becomes available soon after expiry. So when a domain name drops, i.e. it becomes available for general public consumption again, then a drop catcher tries to buy or capture that domain name. And they do that on behalf of corporates, individuals, etc. So anybody can sign up to a drop catcher and sometimes pay a fee before the name is captured, or pay a fee after the name is captured. And captured, by captured I mean registered. There are a few very large registrars that are out there. Now, generally speaking, the large registrars are ones that sell to the general public. So they are open registrars. In other words, they only deal with the general public. Some examples of those are GoDaddy, TwoCows. So most of you would have heard of these particular registrars. There is another type of registrar other than drop catchers and general registrars, and that is corporate registrars. Now, corporate registrars deal mainly with corporate entities, so big businesses. So they manage, look after, control, and ensure that a brand's domain name strategy and domain names are renewed, looked after, you know, kept up, point to the right place, etc. A couple of examples are CSC, the Comlade Group, etc. There are a few corporate registrars out there, and they vary in size. So that's the registries and the registrars who are part of the contracted party's house. Next week, I'll talk about the non-contracted party's house, so those bodies that don't have contracts with ICANN, so in other words, don't pay fees to ICANN, etc., but they also provide a valuable service within the ICANN community. So what I'm going to look at now real quickly is a couple of examples of working groups that the CPH has been involved in over the last few years. Now, I'm only picking two. There are about 40, 50, maybe even more than that, working groups and policies that have been created over the last few years. And if anybody's interested, let me know. I'll point you in the right direction if you're interested in having a look at what's actually been done. So one of the biggest ones over the last few years was around GDPR. Now, GDPR stands for General Data Protection Regulation, and this was put in place by the European Union. And it's a rule which loosely governs how private citizens' data is collected, used, and displayed. So part of this GDPR ruling involves domain names. I mean, it's GDPR covers everything from how you interact with a normal business, how your data is shared between entities that are in the same group of a company, etc. So from the domain name side of it, we're looking at things like the Whois service. Now, the Whois service is where you would go previously to see who the registrant or owner is of a domain name. So you would go to a page, you'd put in the domain name, and it'll present to you a set of data that's been provided. In other words, the name of the person that owns the domain name, their address details, email address, telephone number, email address, contacts, all sorts of stuff like that. Under GDPR, it's become a bit of an issue in the sense that all private citizens' data cannot be shown on the Whois. Okay, so what I mean by that is, if I register a name and it's in my name, my details are not meant to be public, because that's a decision I have taken as a citizen that I do not want my data to be made public. Businesses cannot hide all of their data, but they can hide personally identifiable data. So personally identifiable data is, for example, a telephone number, an email address of a specific named person, or a named person. So if you put domain manager and the email address is domainmanager@brand.com, that's okay. But if you put Dietmar and Dietmar@brand.com, that's not okay, because that's privately identifiable information. So that information has been removed from the Whois by pretty much all top level domain names, including ccTLDs. So that does mean that people like law enforcement, for example, brand protection lawyers, so lawyers that work for brands with regards to the intellectual property, and all sorts of other services, were not able to and have not been able to identify who owns a particular domain name. So what I did is it created a process which is referred to as the Expedited Policy Development Process, or EPDP Phase 1. Now, an expedited policy development process, as the name suggests, means that this process is quicker than the normal working group process within the ICANN community. And phase one, this phase was just basically set up to deal with Whois and data presentation. It was a long process, and EPDP phase one finally approved by the ICANN board on the 15th of May 2019. And was implemented by registries and registrars by the 20th of February 2020. Basically, the EPDP phase one allowed ICANN and the CPH to make alterations to their agreements with each other with regards to GDPR in a speedy and effective manner. So the non-CPH groups also discussed and partook in this particular process, and did try to add new rules, etc., which were not accepted by the consensus policy or consensus of the groups. They did try and add in some additional rules and regulations that didn't necessarily have as much to do with GDPR as what was presented. So anybody that's interested in this EPDP and what they discussed and what the final resolutions were, just reach out to me and I'll provide you with some data and some links that you can go and have a look at your own time and leisure. There is a second phase currently running for the EPDP, and this is dealing with how the data is displayed and how relevant parties get access to this data. So this is something that's ongoing. There's light at the end of the tunnel at some stage in the near future. Again, if anybody's interested in this, please reach out to me. Feel free to reach out to me, and I can, you know, run through it a little bit with you. There's a lot of information. So this particular podcast, I'd be talking for days before I'd have to end the podcast. Another example of a working group that's just actually completed its work was referred to as the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group, or SubPro Working Group. This SubPro was led by two vice chairs, Jeff Newman of JJN Solutions and Cheryl Langdon Orr. Now, the working group started its work in December 2015 and presented its final report to the GNSO in January 2021. What this does show is that any work done within the ICANN community can be quite a drawn-out process. It means that everyone has an opportunity to speak. Everyone has an opportunity to put forward their case. Everyone has an opportunity to disagree with other parties. And eventually, as with this group, a final consensus document is consensus is reached and a document is presented to the GNSO Council. And just this week, the GNSO Council unanimously approved the work of the SubPro Working Group and has passed that final report onto the ICANN board to discuss and then potentially implement. So what that means is that if the ICANN board agrees with the outcome from the SubPro Working Group, it will then start working towards the next round of new GTLD applications. Now, this particular working group, as I said, started in December 2015. It had a variety of work of groups that were involved. It was even split up into five work tracks at one stage, which dealt with various topics, you know, things like cost of application, rules of the application process, governmental concerns, auctions. The topics were wide and very in-depth. After a long period of discussions, the various parties in the working group agreed on a set of comments that were sent to the GNSO Council to be approved, which they did. Now, that does not mean everyone was happy with the outcome, but because ICANN's model is a bottom-up, stakeholder-driven process, that means they do work towards a general consensus. So not everyone would have been happy. Not everyone got what they wanted. Not everyone was able to, you know, get the changes that they wanted or etc. But it was a general agreed process, and everyone was relatively happy with the outcome of the final report. So the next step, as I say, is for the ICANN board to put this out for a public comment. And then hopefully improve the next round of new GTLDs, which could mean there could be changes to the actual process of the application, the costs of the application, the rules, contracts, etc. So there is still a lot of work to be done before the next round comes around, but at least it's moving along. And as I said before on EPDP Phase 2, this is actually the SubPro Working Group is a very interesting topic. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to reach out to me, and we can have a separate discussion on this. I mean, this is, again, just like EPDP2, SubPro, we could be discussing that on a podcast for days. I'm not too sure too many people would be excited about that, but I find it a very exciting topic. So, I've given you a lot of information again in this episode. And if anybody has any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm enjoying the podcast, and I do enjoy providing information to people on a topic that I find very interesting. And hopefully over the next few weeks, I'll be doing some more. And the topics next week, for example, will be on the non-contracted parties house. Again, very interesting part of the ICANN community, so look forward to putting that up next week, and hopefully everyone will get an opportunity to listen to it and get a better understanding of how that particular part of the ICANN community works. Hope to have you all back again, and I hope you'll subscribe through the various platforms where you listen to the podcast, and please tell your friends, family, colleagues, etc., anybody that might be interested in this, just tell them to go and have a listen. So bye for now. Have a great day. Always remain positive no matter what the situation is that you're in. Always remember to remain positive. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope you all have an excellent week. Thank you.